Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 29 of Game On with Cody and John. On this episode's big deal, this one goes to 11.
We'll take a look at our top 11 games of all time.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
Arcane Legions.
Will you fall in rank or will you desert from this army?
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John, not with Single L, not with Dave, they did a great job, but I'm back, kids.
That's right, and you are?
Oh, I'm Cody, by the way.
And I'm John.
In case you forgot.
Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games, coming to you from crisp.
Beautiful fall weather kicking in.
It's lovely.
Boy, after like all the humidity in Florida, it was nice coming off that plane. Ah, here we are.
You know, I actually went to lunch with some friends at work, and we walked out. We actually were going to walk to lunch. I got halfway to the parking lot. I turned around and went back
because
I was in a short sleeve shirt.
Come on. It's not that cold.
It was yesterday.
Goodness gracious.
Well, anyway, so we're back on the kind of the normal schedule here, and we got Cody back in the studio.
Howdy.
Welcome back. And Cody is back a changed man.
Yeah.
He's got the ring on
his
finger.
I got the ring. I'm rocking.
He's all married
I'm
up.
All responsible and... such.
Did you have a good time on your honeymoon?
I did. I had a really good time. Did a lot of cool stuff at Disney World, and it's good to be home. Good to kind of be back to the grind, as it were. But
yeah,
good to be back and talking to you all, to you fine people.
You fine folk.
You fine folk.
Well, and we got a lot of great stuff to talk about, as always, on the show. On our big deal segment, we're going to be talking about our top 11 games.
That's right, because we wouldn't want to copy that great show, The Dice Tower.
No.
We're one better, and we're not going to do a top 10 every episode. But, you know, we kind of need to draw that line in the sand and say, you know, these are our top games, so you kind of know where we're coming from. You know, roughly, you know, kind of our gaming things. You know that I love Euro games, and John just hates all Euro games.
Negative.
Oh, sorry. I got it mixed up there.
Yeah.
But this will be nice, so you can see where we're coming from, and we can get some good feedback from you, the listener.
Yep. And in our Buy, Try, or Deny, we're going to be taking a look at Arcane Legions, that new kind of cool miniatures game within little trays. I'm sure if you listen to gaming podcasts, you've heard about it on a couple of other podcasts. It's just being released, I think, this month, next month, yep. And been coming out at all the conventions, but it's going to be pretty interesting to talk about this foray into miniatures gaming.
Indeed. But before we get into all of that, it is tradition, and we stand on tradition here at Game On with Cody and John, to start with the Game On Inbox, which begins
now.
The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it.
All right, it is time for the Game On Inbox, and we're going to start off the inbox with a little segment from our friends over at the D6 Generation. They had a very special guest recently.
That's right, and you guys would all know him who've listened to the show. It's Dan the Businessman.
Dan the Businessman from Myriad Games.
Arrington, that's right. And on episode 40 of the D6 Generation, another great gaming podcast, it's on the Pulp Gamer Media Network. They did a full interview with Dan. Now, they're based in New Hampshire, and so they just basically had Dan over to their house and did a live interview with him. And he talks all about his philosophy of the friendly local game store and the game store that he runs, how he got into the business, what some of the pluses and minuses, the ups and the downs of
the business. It makes John and I want to go out and start Goblin Games.
It totally does. I call up Dan and ask, you know, do you do franchising?
Myriad Games West.
That's right. But it's a really great interview, and we actually want to just bring you just a little excerpt from the interview to kind of whet your appetite there. So here's some of that interview from the D6 Generation, episode 40.
Right. You're never really away. So those are the challenges. What do you find as being, what's one of the more rewarding aspects of
owning? Ooh, good question. Good question.
Thank you, Rafe.
Good bullet point. All right. So,
there's no bullet points.
Except for the misspelled ones you bring up every week.
Behind there is no spoon.
Pay no attention to those bullet points behind the curtain. So the most rewarding aspect is definitely being able to craft the best shopping experience that we can for our customers and to share that with other people, because that's essentially what we do. We are your friendly professional game store. And what we do is we provide you with information that's going to help you find fun. It's like we said in one of our spots, I think in the last episode, our little like promo spot is we don't just sell board and card games. We sell fun. We sell fun in little boxes with pieces of plastic and dice. And that's what we do. We sell prospective fun, essentially. We say, hey, this is going to be fun. You take it home, you play it, you go, oh, that was fun. You come back and you say, give me some more fun. You may say, hey, I really like Tomb. What else can I get? And I say, you should get Tomb Cryptmaster, or you should get, you know, Runebound, or whatever other stuff you might like. You should get Dungeon Twister. But that's where I share that information is the most rewarding aspect. When somebody comes back and says, I really enjoy, just like you guys enjoy your feedback on the show, getting that feedback from customers, and you get those emails and everything, and most people don't take the time to respond and give you feedback. And when people do, it's very rewarding. When you get an email that says, hey, I just wanted to thank you for your great recommendations the other day, and I really love your store. It's a very nice place to shop, and I look forward to shopping there in the future. That sort of thing. And really, I mean, as a store owner, we're engaged in monetary transactions, essentially. You're paying us on a per-transaction basis versus like a consultation, et cetera. Whenever people buy things from us, that's a compliment to us that says, hey, right, we believe that you provided a good value to us, and therefore we're going to purchase this. So that's the most rewarding aspect, is being able to, as opposed to being in a larger company where, hey, I got this great idea, let me send that to marketing and then HR.
Yeah.
And this, like, I can do that. So I can take something from idea, from inspiration to implementation very quickly in the course of, you know, days. Whereas normally that would take, and having worked in other organizations that will also remain nameless, they, if you're working in committees and that sort of thing, it takes a lot longer to realize things, and a lot of things get killed in committee and they never actually become realized. So being able to take good ideas and put them into realization is really what I enjoy the most out of any business or professional endeavor. And specifically for games, it's mostly that feedback from people that are actually using the product, that are playing the games. And that's what most people will respond, whether they're manufacturers or whatever. Mm-hmm. They want to hear actual feedback on their product.
So if you want to catch that entire interview in its entirety, check out episode 40 of the D6 Generation, and check out Myriad Games at myriadgames.com.
And you can check other great podcasts in the Pulp Gamer Media Network at pulpgamer.com.
That's right. Just you open up several windows, because you can have all those things up at once.
Listen to them all at the same time.
That's right.
Enjoy. A cacophony of gaming goodness.
Lovely.
If you will.
All right. Well, now that we've done our due diligence to the man, we'll be doing some more due diligence later on in the show, of course. We'll move on to games that we've been playing lately. And so I'll start with you, Cody, although I have an idea, you know, then there's probably not too much in the hopper for this past couple weeks.
No, the extent of the game playing we did was we played Martian Flux while waiting in the Chicago airport for our flight to Orlando.
Okay.
And then while at the resort, we stayed at Disney's Animal Kingdom Lodge, and it's kind of like an African themed, you know, they got animals and other critters there. And we were just killing some time. They have like this nice little library area, you know, where you can just sit and relax. They had one of the guides there from South Africa, and she was teaching, I use air quote here, native games. We talked to her later, and she's like, I actually grew up just playing like Monopoly and Scrabble, you know?
Oh, great. But, the magic of Disney.
Exactly, right? So she taught us how to play Mancala.
Okay, yeah.
Which I had seen before but didn't know how to play.
I actually own that game. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't.
Okay.
Well. And then I won that, surprisingly.
Nice.
And then she taught us this. It's almost like this kind of advanced tic-tac-toe variant. I believe it's called like melee, or it's kind of like melee,
so
but,
is it your melee
but it's like MMELE, I think is how it's spelled.
Oh, you need to buy a vowel there.
Yeah, I guess. But you know, we're playing it, and Kaylin just beating me, and this guide from South Africa, she just you know, I look over and it's like, oh, how are we doing, you know, half joking, and she looks at me, and she's like, your wife is playing with strategy. You are not.
You're playing with zest and alacrity.
I know. I'm like, oh, okay, you know. But that was fun. But that's about the extent of the gaming we did. We were paying due diligence to the mouse most of the time.
To the mouse.
But John, you did probably enough gaming for both of us while in my stead.
Oh, that's true. And you know, I forgot, and I didn't mention this on our notes here, that you and I actually did get to play some games
oh,
on
yeah.
the wedding weekend.
Yeah, quite true. Yeah, yeah. They the rehearsal day, I guess, before the rehearsal, we played a few things.
Yeah, we played Bacchus's Banquet. Bacchus's
Banquet, Harry's Grandson Baseball.
Harry's Grandson Baseball, and Ubongo Duel.
Oh, God.
Which you pretty much just completely
gave up on. I'm decent at regular Ubongo, but Duel, I'm bad.
Let's say go so I can sit here and watch John do the puzzle.
Exactly.
Ubongo. So other than that, though, while Cody was away on his honeymoon, I did get a chance to play quite a bit of Magic Plane Chase. We talked about that in the last episode.
It's a buy for me. I know you all were on pins and needles wondering.
Yeah, no, we were.
Love it.
Okay, so we got to play quite a bit of that. Still a lot of fun. Would recommend that you'd pick that one up. I got to play Tales of the Arabian Nights, which we talked to about a few episodes back, mm-hmm. with my father-in-law. And I found that that's actually a really good two-player game.
Really?
And we... when we reviewed it, we had actually done a five-player game, which we thought was a little bit too many people, a little bit too much going on. But with two players, you can really keep track of the stories that are going on. And we even played an abbreviated game where instead of trying to do a combination of 20 points to story and destiny points, we just did 10.
Okay.
And that made the game less than an hour to play.
Oh, nice.
And it was still, you still got kind of the effect of the game and the fun of the stories, but that was kind of cool. One of the probably biggest things that's happened this past week is that I finally got to play my new third edition version of Space Hulk.
The new hotness.
Oh, you know, man, if you're on Board Game Geek at all, you know that about every third thread that's on the forums is about Space Hulk.
I'm ready to try it, just on hype alone. I'm like, oh, that looks neat.
The hype machine
looks Ameritrashy. I'll play it.
It's probably the most Ameritrashy game I've ever played.
I'll wear my American flag t-shirt.
Absolutely. Drink some, you know, really cheap beer.
That's right. Some PBR.
But part of that experience was also assembling the miniatures, since everything comes on sprues. So I spent one evening putting together all my Space Marines, and then actually on my birthday, which was this past Saturday, I got up early in the morning, and that was kind of my birthday treat to myself, was sitting and putting together and gluing Gene Stealers. So that was a lot of fun, and then that evening I got to play my first game of that with Rachel, and she really liked it too.
Oh, cool.
Plays really nice. We won't talk too much about it because I think we're going to be talking about that in more detail in an upcoming episode.
Ooh,
a little tease there. But yeah, I thought it was a really cool game, and if you get a chance to pick one up, you're probably going to have to pay over retail for it, but go give that a shot.
And you got some other birthday presents there.
Oh, that's true, yeah. You know, as I've been sort of leading everyone on the last few episodes, I've been interested in getting into miniatures wargaming a little bit, thanks to those guys at the D6 Generation. And so I purchased one Warjack, and I assembled it for War Machine. And I just now have gotten a whole battle group box set of the Protectorate of Menoth. So that's going to be four more miniatures for me to put together. And I got one of the guys primed with my primer. I also got a whole bunch of paints. So I'm just all set now with all of the hobbies.
You just got to do it now.
I just got to sit down and actually do the painting. And I'm scared to death because I think I'm going to be terrible at it. Mm-hmm. But I'll give it a try. Everyone has encouraged me that all it takes is a little bit of patience. And I do have that because I have two small children.
Right. See, I would be terrible at it.
Yeah, well, you're still going to probably give it a little bit of a try, though.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I still need to... Well, once everything gets settled here, moving in with Mrs. Jones, then... We'll get things worked in. I will get a Signar battle group, Hail Signar.
Now you were a little bit enthralled with the dip technique, right?
Oh yeah, you showed me the threads on that, and that just rocked my world. Like, I want to go back and paint all my Talisman miniatures and my Fury Dracula, because it wouldn't take that long, really.
Yeah, just do the base coating, and then you try that dip, and that's like a wash and a highlight and all that kind of stuff together. So
I'm lazy, so that works.
You painting purists out there that might not think that that's a legit way to get your miniatures painted, but we just want to get to the playing part. That's
right. Yeah. For something like War Machine, I would paint it. You know, I would do it, you know, straight up. But for something like, you know, Talisman or Fury of Dracula, where painting the pieces is pretty much just, you know, extracurricular, I would just dip it and be done with it, you know, because they look good.
Yeah, I'm sort of thinking about maybe doing that with the Space Hulk guys, doing a little bit of the dip technique.
We'll have a dip party.
A dip party.
We'll take pictures.
Okay.
We'll have a lot of tobacco. Game On with Cody and John does not condone the use of tobacco products.
Thank you, announcer.
No problem.
No problem. All right, well, moving on to some listener feedback. We got a few emails in the Game One inbox. One in particular we want to mention, very exciting news for us, is that we apparently have at least one listener in the great country of, or continent of, Australia.
It's both.
It's a country and a continent.
Social studies on.
That's right. So I just want to read this email from our friend Rick. Hi, guys. I just wanted to say g'day. I guess it's g'day. G'day, Rick.
Read the email.
Sorry. And let you know that I enjoy your gaming podcast. I was put onto your show by the guys from the D6 Generation.
They're getting a lot of air.
They keep getting coming up again. When I was exchanging some emails and made a suggestion that they could do a segment on quick games that could be played in a work lunchtime. Sound familiar?
Done.
Craig from the D6G told me that your show had already covered that and that he thought I would like your podcast and should check it out. And so I did and have been listening to your podcast for a while now. And then he goes on to say that I'm looking forward to hearing about Cody's miniature gaming experience with War Machine. Apparently, he's not looking forward to my miniature gaming work.
Well, I wouldn't.
Okay. But my miniatures gaming is slowly getting less and less, he says. Not sure if it's an age thing. And he says that he is 48.
That's not old.
No, it's not. No.
Come on. I mean, you're 56.
I feel that way. Or just because I've been doing it for the last 10 years and starting to look at my latest unpainted army with some dread. I guess that's probably a common thing that the miniatures gamers go through is never having everything painted. I've been getting into some board games and card games in the last year thanks to you and the D6G, and it's been great. It's much easier to get people into gaming that way than trying to get them to spend $400 on a 40K army.
Quite true.
So keep up the good work. I imagine it must take a substantial amount of your free time. Warm regards, Rick.
Well, thanks, Rick.
Yeah, we really appreciate that.
Now, I tell you, if you just move to Indianapolis, the gaming capital of the world, you won't have a problem finding miniatures players because, we'll play.
We'll play. There's plenty of folks. Like what we said, 6 gaming stores around town.
Yeah,
all of them have some miniatures gaming going on.
Yeah, and what he mentioned, having all the unpainted miniatures on his shelf, that's one of the things that's kind of drawn my eye toward War Machine is, like, I really like that small squad combat. I don't like kind of the companies and legions, having 400 miniatures out on the table. I like just the small kind of, you have a few heavy guys and you have some light guys on foot and just go at it. I really like that.
Yeah, and when I was in the game store, I was actually the game preserve up at the Fashion Mall. Really nice.
The
good game preserve. And was getting some of my War Machine stuff. The guy behind the counter was real helpful, and he was asking me some questions about what I was interested in regarding painting. And I was mentioning that it's taken me forever to get all my stuff together and that hopefully by the end of the year I'll have one guy painted. And he said that he says he wishes that he had gotten started smaller because now he says he owns hundreds of miniatures for Warhammer 40K. And he actually went and showed me this product that I think it's Citadel makes. It's basically like a spray gun for paint. Where you basically line up like 10 miniatures and just go and just paint them all at once.
That's too much.
It's like, I don't want to get to that point where I'm having to, buy products that'll help me to paint faster.
Yeah.
So that's a listener feedback. Thank you so much to Rick from Perth, Australia, and good day to you. So let's move into some game news, and we've got a little piece of news from Fat Dragon Games.
Right. You might have remembered in our Gen Con episode, we did an interview with Fat Dragon president Tom Tullis, and they've got a new product that deals with HeroScape instead of just kind of your standard D&D, one-inch square sort of things.
Yeah, hex stuff.
Yeah, I need to look at it more. I don't think we've decided whether it's a standalone thing or just something you put over the existing plastic hexes.
Yeah, it's hard to tell from looking at the picture that we're looking at with the press release here. It's definitely some neat-looking stuff, but we can't really tell whether it's stuff that's meant to stand on its own as terrain or whether it's just supposed to be kind of an overlay to make it look cooler.
Yeah, but I've noticed that more people are getting HeroScape terrain. They're doing it more for other games. They'll get it for HeroScape, but it works really well for Battletech. And some people actually do it for RPGs. They'll do it for Savage Worlds, D&D,
I've heard even Memoir 44 for board gaming that some people have used.
Oh, really?
That'd be cool. Periscope terrain for that.
Oh, because those are hexes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, but apparently there's all these kind of 3D elements and just other things to kind of spice up your existing HeroScape terrain. It looks pretty neat, and you can't beat the buy-in cost, a $5 PDF.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess you're going to pay for the card stock and your ink and all that kind of stuff, but and any tools that you use. But still, it's a lot cheaper than going out and trying to buy a full set of HeroScape terrain, which I think is becoming a little bit more scarce because they're not producing that original master set much anymore.
Right. And if you check out their website, you'll also see a lot of other things. And they're, like I said, they're very low price. They have a kind of a low buy-in. Kaylin and I have bought some recently and have been putting it together, and it's easier than it looks. Like I'm a klutz when it comes to kind of crafty stuff, and I can do it pretty easily. So
for you board gamers out there that are interested in print and play games, I mean, it's really similar to that. Mm-hmm. You know, you print out the PDFs of stuff, and then you might have to do a little bit of cutting, a little bit of folding, but it can be really rewarding and a lot cheaper than going and buying some of the maybe Dwarven Forge or some of those other companies that are more expensive.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, and the nice thing about Fat Dragon is you can just print on demand. You know, it's like obviously you'd have to buy the ink and the paper, but you know, you have the PDF, you've got it. If you want to print 100 of them, you can print 100 of them. You know, it's not a limit to what you can get there. So definitely check that out on the other Fat Dragon stuff. I know Tom personally is a great guy, and he runs a great gamer focused business, and I think that's important. So go check out his stuff.
If you ever see him at a convention, go up and say hi to him. He's a attractive bald man.
That's right.
And go shake his hand.
And
he's nice
just
guy.
Passionate about the hobby. So definitely check it out.
Yeah. One final piece of news from our acquaintances at Wizards of the Coast. They have apparently beta launched something called Wizards Community, which is a social networking site that's been developed by them. It's sort of expanded upon the forums that were already there. Like all the content of their forums is still there, but they've added on wikis, groups, friend lists, a calendar, and like an invitation system, places for photographs, blogs, personal pages, all that kind of stuff. So kind of Facebook-esque.
Yeah, I'll do you one better on that. I don't see why you need that stuff, because you know that's kind of what they tried with Gleemax, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
But they launched their new... they redid the D&D website today, and it is fantastic.
Oh, yeah?
They knocked it out of the park. The old one was clunky, really hard to get around. This one, it's a sexy little site. I mean, it everything you need, it's easy to navigate, and they've done a really good job. And like I've mentioned in past episodes, you know, I'm in this really weird spot with 4E because I like playing it. It's fun. You know, I maybe prefer older editions, but the 4E group that I DM for, they love the game.
Wow.
Like they never want to go back. Hmm. I mean, it's, you know, so I'm kind of like, well, I like running it and they really like it, but I kind of like, you know, this, so...
You can play both. Why not both?
Why not both? And like we mentioned in the little wedding thing at the end of last episode, you know, Kaylin's going to run Pathfinder, so I guess I can be free to run this. But yeah, check out the new WotC website. It seems like only the D&D section right now has been, the D&D and the community section has been updated, but it looks great, and they've done a good job. They're really trying.
I mean, it's about time for them to get a base hit. You know, they've been striking out a lot.
I think the tide may be turning for them on D&D. I think they're starting to turn the corner and start to get some people. So
I think that Pathfinder thing might have put a little bit of fear of God in them.
Yeah, because they were pretty much unchallenged there for that first year of 4E. And, you know, I think, you know, competition is a great motivator there.
Definitely. Capitalism on.
That's right.
All right, well, you know, I think that actually wraps up the Game On Inbox. A nice, tight, crisp Game On Inbox. Just enough information to keep you sliding for another couple of weeks. And
now we do have another edition of everyone's favorite new segment.
And what segment would that be?
Well, I'm not going to ruin the title, but it is very self-explanatory. So why don't you take a listen?
All right, let's run it. And now it's time for another edition of Games Cody Won't Play.
I ain't going to play him. You can't make me.
Je suis enchanté. Où est la bibliothèque? Voilà mon passeport. Ah, Gérald Depardieu. Baguette.
Baguette.
Feu de fafa.
All right, well, welcome to the first edition of Games Cody Won't Play, a new segment here on Game On with Cody and John, where we will be looking at some games that Cody won't play. That's pretty much self-explanatory, I guess. The reason why we're starting up this segment is because there is a particular category of games that Cody is just really not interested in playing that I kind of am interested in playing, and that is mainly Euro games. Now, it's not just Euro games, I guess, but and I'm not also, we're also not saying that Cody won't play any Euro games, but there if a game comes across our desk and I say, hey, you want to play this? And Cody says, I'm not interested, then that's going to go into this segment. And so I have the opportunity to bring my lovely wife, Rachel, back onto the show. Hi, Rachel.
Hello.
And She is a Eurogame fan, as am I, and so is going to give us an opportunity to do some kind of short reviews of European board games and also some other kinds of board games, but just things Cody wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. And the first one we're going to talk about is Le Havre. Is that right, Rachel?
I took Spanish. I have no idea.
Okay, no help from the Spanish speaker there. Well, I've heard lots of other podcasts and other audio media that they've been pronouncing it like the name of the quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings, Brett Favre, and calling it Le Havre. But just to be definitive, I found a really nice pronunciation online of how this game is pronounced, and here is how it's pronounced by a real-life French person.
Le Havre.
Okay, so there you have it.
That's way better than being pronounced by a real dead French person.
Dead French people have a hard time pronouncing this, definitely. So it's Le Havre. Can you, Rachel? Go ahead.
Le Havre.
Le Havre.
Le Havre. I feel like I'm licking my face.
Okay, well, you know, yeah, that's. Can make some commentary about. I won't even go there.
No.
All right, so. So Le Havre is a game that is designed by Uwe Rosenberg, who is the designer of the number one game on BoardGameGeek, Agricola. And this is sort of a follow-up game in the same sort of genre as Agricola. And this is a game about a shipping harbor in the town of Le Havre, France. And so it's a very similar game to Agricola in several respects, but there's also a lot of things that are different about it. And so Rachel and I had an opportunity to play a really nice two-player game of this. So I'm going to give you the quick rules rundown, and then we're going to discuss some things about this game. And then we'll give you our opinions on it. So anyway, in this game, what you're going to be doing is collecting resources and then using those resources to generate other resources. And the ultimate goal is that you're trying to end up with the most money. Now, the way that you're going to get money in this game is by taking those resources, you know, upgrading them, making them better, and then shipping those resources via some boats that you have to buy or build. And then shipping those things is going to get you the money that you need. And so you do this over a certain number of rounds, and then whoever has the most money at the end is the winner. So there's a lot of strategy in this game. There is, I think, almost no luck. I don't think there's any kind of a luck element in this game. Do you think so?
Not that I can see, I don't think.
Okay. So the way the game is set up is the board itself is a little three-section board. It's three little boards that you butt up against one another, and it creates this little shipping lane. And so you have at the bottom of the board this sort of little stream area where a boat is going to go. Everybody gets a little boat token, and you're also going to get a wooden disc that represents you or a person, I guess, and that person's going to move around on the board at different times. Below the little lane that the boats are going to travel on, there are all these little dock areas, and these are called the offer spaces, and they have all of the basic resources in the game. You have the actual money resources, which is the franc, and then you have fish, wood, clay, iron, grain, and cattle. And at the beginning of the game, you'll be able to set up initial offers for these. So you're going to have little chips that will represent the different resources. And they're double-sided. So as I mentioned, you're going to be upgrading those resources. And when you upgrade them, you're going to turn them over. So for example, you might take a clay, which would be a little clay chip, and then you're going to turn it over when you upgrade it into brick, and then it'll say brick on there. And so that's a real nice thing. And then above the shipping lane area, you're going to see all of these spaces for supplies. So cattle supply, iron supply, so forth and so on. And then a ton of these little cardboard tokens that are going to sit on there. There's really just an overabundance of these in the game. And, you know, you can just lay a few out. I've even seen folks that get little plastic containers to put the chips in, and they just lay those on the supply spaces on the board. Above that, you're going to have three areas that are called building proposal areas. Now, one of the ways that you're going to need to upgrade these resources is and utilize the resources and pull them all together is by using buildings that you build. And there's a whole stack of buildings, three stacks actually, that are going to start off on the board during the game. And you can only build the buildings that are on the very top. And then as you go along, you'll be kind of going through these piles of cards and eventually getting to better and better buildings. So there's a definite momentum that builds with this game as you go along. So one of the nicest things about the game is that there's a lot of different setups based upon the number of players and whether you want to play a full game or what they call a shortened version of the game. And so really they've gone to great lengths to have little reference cards and things in the rules that will help you to understand how you need to set this game up. This game can actually be played solo. It's for 1 to 5 players. And so you know, there's a solo play option as well, but it scales really, really well. And so the number of things you're going to have on the board and the number of rounds and what the different requirements are for certain things on the game is going to be different depending on what number of players that you have. So you're going to set everything up on the board. And one of the main things to note is that I mentioned you're going to be trying to upgrade your resources that you get. You're trying to get resources and then upgrade them. And then you're going to be taking those resources and using boats to ship those things off to points, you know, beyond and getting money for those things. So this is sort of the engine of the game, is that you're trying to start off by getting resources, making those resources better using these buildings. Then you're going to be trying to build boats and then use those boats with shipping in the shipping lanes to be able to get money. Because the point of the game, as I mentioned, is that whoever has the most money at the end of the game is going to be the winner. So the game is going to be played in several rounds, and that's also determined by the number of players that you're playing with. And so each round is also going to have 7 phases to it, or 7 turns, I guess, if you would say. And those are very nicely delineated by these little circular spaces on the board in this little blue streamy, blue watery road area that you're going to be going down. So you have a little boat token that's going to be going on to, you know, the first space to show the first turn. And then once you've completed your actions, the other players will move on to that space and take their turn, and then you'll move to the next space. And so it'll just go in these turns until you get to the very end of your round. When you get to the end of the round, then you have a round card, and that card will determine how much food you need to feed all of your workers. So in addition to trying to get all these upgraded resources and eventually get to building boats and all that kind of stuff, you're going to have to feed all the people that are working for you. And so much like Agricola, when you have like a harvest phase or something like that, you're going to need to feed people at the end of each round. And, you know, that could end up costing you some money if you're not able to do that. So that will happen. And then once that round is over with, that round card is actually turned over, and that turns into a boat, a ship of some kind, which will lay on the board, which will then give someone later on in the game the opportunity to build that ship and then use that ship for shipping. So, like I said, there's this momentum in the game that's building. You get more ships. Then, you know, as the rounds go on, you actually have better ships. You start off with wooden ones, then iron, steel, and even some luxury liners towards the end of the game. So that's kind of a high-level overview of the game. There's some other kind of picky details, but that's sort of the flavor of the game. Now, Rachel, when we played this game, you said that this game reminded you of 2 other games that you played before.
Yeah, I would say it reminded me of Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And then just because of the, well, I guess all Euro games have some kind of trading and resource aspect of it, or at least most of them. And then it also reminded me of kind of a shortened version of Agricola. Or, I mean, it's not necessarily...
Like a more simplified
version mm-hmm. I would say, you know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I think the thing about Puerto Rico, I agree with you about Puerto Rico, especially because of that shipping aspect. Mm-hmm. That was really the way that you get a lot of victory points in Puerto Rico, is by being able to get your resources and then ship them off in those boats. And it's the same thing here. If you're not able to get boats and ship stuff, you're not going to win this game. The boats are extremely important to be able to win the game. And also, if you're able to control the wharf and control the shipping lanes, that's a bonus as well. That might be kind of difficult to do. But knowing what buildings to control, I think, is an important part of it. The cards are very well done, and the variety that you have in the buildings, I think, is very interesting. It is a long game, and yeah. I think it's nice that they included some shortened rules. They kind of have changed up the different resources and amounts of food that you need for feeding and that kind of stuff. But it also is just a shortened number of rounds, which I think is a really good idea, because a full game of this with a full complement of players, you could be talking 3 or 4 hours to get this thing done. And I don't think that the game is fun enough to be fun for 3 hours.
We played the shortened version with 2 players. And mm-hmm. What do you think? Maybe an hour? 45 minutes to an hour, maybe?
I think it was closer to an hour and a half, but...
time flies.
I know, you're having so much fun, aren't you? But I think as far as resource management games, it's got a lot of depth and a lot of things you can do. I don't think you're going to be good at this game the first time you play it.
No, I mean, in fact, when we were talking about the shipping lanes and stuff, halfway through, we didn't even realize, you know, how important those were, how important certain resources were, what certain cards did until, you know, we got halfway through and then the light bulb came on and we went, oh, we so should have been doing something else the whole time.
Exactly.
You know?
I'm like, well, I'm collecting all this grain. That's fun. Well, that doesn't really do me any good. But no, you're right. And I think that... that's sort of the learning curve in the game. If you know up front that the boats are important and the shipping lanes are important, that will help you a whole lot. Because when we got to the part where after the first couple rounds, we're turning over these ship cards, and it's like, well, how do you build the ships? Oh, you need a wharf. Where's the wharf? I'm looking on the board for a space for the wharf, and I don't see it. So, and it turns out, you know, it's a card that you have to get that's sort of buried halfway in these building proposal cards. So,
which would probably go faster if you had, you know, multiple players, I would think.
Yeah, because people will be snatching up these buildings.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's, like I said, kind of a high-level overview, and let's just move on into the what everybody wants to know. So
is it still a buy, try, or deny, since this is not games that Cody's going to play?
We're still going to go, you know, that is the game on, the patented Game On with Cody and John review system, and so we're going to go with that. So I will ask you, Rachel, my lovely wife, Lable, buy, try, or deny.
Do you need to clean off your mic there?
I think so. I need a towel or something.
You know, I am a big fan of resource management games. I don't know why I like... Maybe it's a control issue. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you're not alone.
I'm not alone. I did like this one. I would actually give it a try plus.
Okay.
I might have to have another go at it to see if I can bump it up to a buy.
Okay.
I mean, I guess we already bought it, but...
well, we never use that as an indicator because I buy lots of things that I don't like, so...
Yeah, I think I would definitely give it a try plus.
Okay, great, with try plus. And so for me, I would give this game a buy. I think it's a really, really well-designed game. And, you know, you have to play it with the right group of people. Like, not Cody.
But,
ouch. Hey, that's this segment, okay?
Did you hear that, Cody? You're not the right group of people.
And he would agree. That's what this segment is. But it's a really great thinking game, you know, and it's fun, and you've got kind of fun components that you're playing with. But it really is, you got to plan your strategy out. There's lots of different paths to victory. You know, it's like any sort of a business game. The point is to make the most money, but there's lots of different ways in this game that you can make money. And you just have to figure out what way you want to go with. So if you have a group of people that like to play this kind of game, you could play this multiple times over multiple sessions and try different routes to victory and see what works best for you. So
there's a lot of playability with it and customization, I'd say.
Yep, and very similar to Agricola in that respect, because I think that game has a lot of replayability because of all the cards in it. So similar here. I think that if you like Agricola, you will definitely like Le Havre, and I think that you may even like it better. If you think that Agricola is a little bit too much, too fiddly, I think this game is less fiddly than Agricola as far as moving stuff around. And, you know, in Agricola, you have to resupply all those things every single round. And that, for me, that's a little tedious.
That got a little annoying.
Yeah, here you really don't have to do that. But I think you still get the same kind of gameplay. You know, great design by Uwe Rosenberg. So I would give this one a definite buy. So that is a try plus from Rachel.
I don't even know if that's considered an option
that you have apparently listened to the show before, because we have given things try pluses.
That is
acceptable.
I'm required by law.
I give it a buy. And so now we don't want to leave Cody out just because this is games he won't play. So I, you know, it's time to get Cody's review of Le Havre and his rating. So Cody, why don't you tell us, what is your rating for Le Havre? Le Havre, Cody, buy, try, or deny?
Deny. Euro games suck.
Okay. Well, are you surprised by that?
You know, I can't. No, not at all. Not at all.
It's kind of what I was expecting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, a little fun there, but
we're gonna find one. That's my goal. We're gonna find a game
that he says he won't play that he'll like. Okay. Well, maybe he'll be won over by our winning review.
Yeah.
It could happen. All right. Well, so thanks so much for listening to our initial episode of Games Cody Won't Play. We'll have a lot more coming for you in upcoming episodes. If you have any suggestions for some European-style games that maybe I would be interested in or Rachel would like, and that you're pretty sure Cody wouldn't be interested in, please send those to the Game On Inbox at...
GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
Thank you very much. And send us your suggestions for those. And you know, I might even already have some of these games in my collection. And if not,
we probably do.
we can probably get some of those in and play them in future segments. So thanks so much for listening. And we're going to kick it back to me and Cody in the studio. So there you have it.
That is a great segment.
You like that segment?
I would not play that game.
Okay. Well, this may be the first of many games Cody won't play that you'll be seeing on the show. There will probably not be a games John won't play segment because I will pretty much play anything.
Well.
But Cody's is a more of a discerning palette for gaming.
Thank you. That's a good way to put it.
I'm trying to make it as nice as possible.
Now, if you want to talk about your palette for gaming or actually anything gaming, you can send us an email at the Game On Inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And that is where you can give us any news, reviews, hints, tips, or general criticism.
we take it all.
That's right.
Yep. All right, well, I guess it's time for us to move on into our big deal segment where, you know, this one
goes to 11.
The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, 11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Well, these do indeed go to 11.
Oh, yes.
And on this episode's Big Deal, we're going to be talking about our top 11 games. Because that's one more.
That's one more than 10. You will know where we stand, dear listeners, if you don't already.
That's right. We've talked about games for a whole year now on this podcast, but we've really never given you the list of...
The list.
of what our top games are. We would in no way want to take away or rip off another podcast. And
we know
that another famous board gaming podcast uses the top 10 list as a main mechanism on their show. But we wouldn't want to take away from what they do. And so we wouldn't want to use 10. 10, you know, can't use that number, right?
10 is boring.
So we're going to go one better.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what we do around here.
That's what we do.
So we're going to give you our top 11 games. Now, there were a couple of rules that we made before we decided to do this. And one is that we were only going to go with board games and card games.
No role-playing games.
No RPGs. Now, Cody actually asked if he could include RPGs. I was fine with it, but we thought that it might, you know,
that's apples and oranges when it comes to this list. I give you my top 11 RPGs.
Go ahead.
Let's go on.
Okay. Didn't have them ready, did you?
Number 11, D6 Star Wars.
Ooh, made it that high, huh? Anyway, so board games and card games only. And also we included miniatures games that have some kind of terrain element included.
And also End and Scape.
In other words, any miniature games ending in Scape. All right, so that's it. And we made our list completely separately.
Yep.
I do not know what's on Cody's list.
Separation of powers.
Separation of powers, separation of church and state. And so now we're just going to launch right into it, okay? I'm excited. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So go ahead. We'll start with you, Cody. Number 11.
Number 11 is partially a sentimental favorite. It is Box of Golf.
Oh, my goodness.
A fantastic game by, I don't even know who makes it.
Box of Golf Industries, I believe.
It is very expensive, but... We always play it at Origins. It's fun, and it's you have little golfers, and it always attracts a crowd.
That's true.
People at Origins, people are like, the hell are they playing? But Box of Golf, my number 11.
Oh, that's an excellent choice.
Thank you.
That's one that if I had, well, I would say if I had more money, but I just spent $100 on Space Hulk. So
yeah.
But if I had the gumption to, I would pick that one up. All right, good choice. My number 11 is Cold War KGB versus CIA.
Ooh, sneaky pick. That's a good one.
It's in the Fantasy Flight Games Silver Line series. It's a card game for two players, and it's a really great, tense, sort of a back-and-forth game with a blackjack mechanic. and sort of a little bit of a push your luck aspect as well. But for such a small box, there's a ton to it, a lot of really cool strategy.
Yeah, good pick. You definitely get your money's worth out of that one. Yeah. That is that one surprised me when we played it, because you took it out and I'm like, oh, here we go.
Right, yeah.
But it was a lot of fun, so solid number 11 pick.
All right, okay, moving on to number 10.
Number 10 is Cutthroat Caverns.
Oh, another good pick. Yeah.
This one, when I first brought it to my group, it was kind of a hit or miss thing. But the more we've played it, people start really kind of getting in the spirit, the negative spirit of it, and just going to town on each other. And by the end of the game, you've just got full on, you know, all in good fun. You know, just people like tossing stuff around and calling people names. I've never not had a really fun walk away experience from this. You know, it's a good. Once you've learned the rules, it just goes really quick. It's fun, a lot of backstabbing, great for getting role players into kind of a board and card game mindset.
Very good pick. Yeah, not on my list at all, but I recognize that's a good one. Yeah. Okay, my number 10 is Kingsburg.
Oh.
A favorite of the show. We've actually reviewed it on the show, and I just recently got the expansion for it. But this is a game originally published by Strata Libre and Elfenworks, I believe, were the first.
I don't know why you're looking at me. Oh, Strata Libre and Elfenworks. I don't know. Is it made by Fantasy Flight?
Well, now it is.
Now it's, it's,
so I know now, it. Now it's produced by Fantasy Thank Flight. You. But this is a great game, kind of almost a Euro-style game with some building mechanics to it. But it uses dice in a really interesting way. And the expansion really adds a lot of cool stuff to it as well. So that's my pick, number 10, Kingsburg.
Number 10? Mm-hmm. Wow. All right.
Yeah, number 9 for you.
Number 9, also somewhat of a sentimental favorite, but I do like playing it with the right people and in the right kind of time frame. And that's Talisman.
Okay.
It was the first non-standard board game I ever really played.
Do you have a preference for do you have a stipulation as to which version?
No. My only stipulation would be, if you play with an expansion, maybe only one at a time. It depends. I haven't really seen the expansion for the new version, but
because you played it with like all of the expansions.
I played
before.
the old second edition one that had every expansion. The game took about 8 hours.
Oh my gosh.
But even then, nowadays, I see what our problem was. We were just having too much fun going around to the different areas. Like, if you can pretty much, even with all the expansions, if you just have your eyes on the prize and go for the middle, it'll take about the same time. So,
right.
I don't care what edition. Talisman, it's a good, fun, roll-and-move, fantasy-based game. It's light, it's stupid, but you can have a lot of fun with it.
Awesome.
Much like John. Wait, what? I'm sorry.
All right, well, my number 9 game is Wits and Wagers.
Number 9.
Number 9.
Goodness gracious. Yep.
And it's
a fun one, but
it is. It's my only, I guess, party game on the list. And I was kind of subscribing to the Jones theory here of one game per type. But that's probably my favorite party game that I can get a whole lot of people around. Now, North Star Games that makes Wits and Wagers also makes Say Anything, which is another really, really great game. But I like Wits and Wagers better because if I had enough time to come up with my own top 100 or whatever, I would definitely put regular Trivial Pursuit in my top 100.
I would too.
Because I have a kind of the head for trivia. I enjoy trivia. So Wits and Wagers is more appealing to me because it's got that trivia aspect to it. But I like the fact that it's balanced and you can bring anybody in.
It's a trivia game. You can get other people to play with you.
Exactly. So yeah, even the trivia heads can enjoy it as well.
Solid pick.
All right. Number 8.
Number 8 is, and this one's kind of a newcomer to my list. It's been out for a few years now, and that's Last Night on Earth.
Oh, very good.
The more I've played it, now that I've really gotten the rules down, I just, the theme of the game is so well done, and I like the mechanics. It all clicks for me. It's fun. I'm just a big fan of this game. I don't really know why its stock has shot up recently, but every time I play it, I walk away very happy, and I just love zombie games.
Yeah. I enjoy that one too, and one of the things I like about Last Night on Earth is that it's easy to teach. Mm-hmm. Even though it has a lot of elements to it, it seems like you can get people into it in about 5 or 10 minutes.
And you can kind of stack on the rules as you see fit, because you can play like a base game of it and then add on these different rules to make it more complex or however you want to play it.
Yeah, no, good pick. Good pick. That was actually in my sideboard, actually.
On your sideboard.
Didn't quite make the 11, but it was in there. So, all right, and number 8 for me, you may be surprised.
Okay.
Pizza Box Football.
Wow.
Yeah.
But Last Night on Earth didn't make it.
Yeah.
But Pizza Box Football did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Explain yourself.
Pizza Box Football is a great game.
It is a great. We have a lot of fun with it. But.
I know. Well, and I think the reason why this one made the list is because I think about memorable game experiences. Now, I played a lot of games of Last Night on Earth, and there's been a couple of those that were memorable. I guess I remember, you know, what exactly happened. And those things are few and far between, those kind of game experiences. Role-playing games a little bit more because your imagination is a lot more engaged. Sure. But for board games, not so much. But we have had some great knockdown, drag out. You know, we pick two teams and just go at it with Pizza Box Football. I love the fact that we can just open it up, get to playing, and it feels like we are jumping into the middle of a football game. It's random that we have very little control over what's going on. Even as you're picking your defense, you know, it's really not going to make that much of a difference. But I feel like it's a great simulation of what goes on with football. So
interesting pick. So that's, I like it.
That was a little dark horse there, but that's Pizza Box Football number 8.
All right, my number 7 game, one of John's all time favorite games, actually, The Settlers of Catan.
Oh, that wasn't anywhere near the list.
I didn't imagine it was. This is about as Euro as I get.
That's it.
I really like it. It's a nice change of pace from the Ameritrash games. Like I said, I don't like to get too Euro. This is a good mix for me. Mm-hmm. It's a classic game. It's you can always find pretty much a pickup game of it at a convention, and I just like it's a very elegant game to me. That's the best way I can put it. I like the trading aspect of it. I like the mix of randomness and kind of set things in it. I don't like the idea that you can get like a deck of cards that is a perfectly balanced die rolling thing.
Oh,
have you seen that?
That's, I have, yeah.
That's so stupid. Roll the dice.
And your wife is very good at this game.
She is very good. She destroys me every time. And we got Seafarers, excellent expansion for it, as part of one of our wedding presents.
Oh, cool.
Luckily, no one disliked me enough to get Cities and Knights because that is terrible.
Well, I finally gotten to the point where I'm willing to play this game. I do own a copy of it.
I think in
a previous episode, we pulled it out and I admitted that I was warming to it. So I will play. Yep. Didn't make the list anywhere near.
No. But my number 7 pick is The Settlers of Catan.
All right. Number 7 for me is actually in the Euro game category, and that's the game Stone Age.
That's a good one.
Okay. Of the Euro games that are out there, it's one that Cody will occasionally play. But not if, like, you know, any of 15 or 16 other games are available. But Stone Age, I think, is a great game. It's from Rio Grande Games. I think it was originally, I don't even know who it was published by.
Who
sorry.
Cares? Come on.
Go look it up on Board Game Geek if you want to learn more about it. But it's a cool game that is worker placement. Has really nice components to it, but it has a dice rolling mechanic that I think is real interesting, where you can sort of, by how many workers you're placing in a certain area, you can sort of leverage your odds on whether you're going to get the resources that you want. That's really neat. And the fact that you get a leather dice cup to roll things
in,
that's
pretty slick.
Kind of cool.
So that's why I like it. It's got the dice.
You know, there you go. So number 7, Stone Age.
All right. Number 6 for me is that miniatures game that ends in Scape. And it is HeroScape.
Number 6, really?
Number 6.
Okay.
It's fun. It's, yeah.
Okay.
Don't dog my pick.
No, it's fine.
Of all the miniatures game I've played, this is far and away my favorite. It's rules light. You can jump right in the action. And I just like I don't necessarily get the behind the theme of all the Valkyrie generals or whatever, but it's like, I like the idea that you can have, you know, paratroopers fighting ninjas, or, you know, pirates fighting robots,
dragons.
Sure,
fighting,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, it's goofy. It's, you can get into it, and it's fun to move your guys around the pieces with or without the fat dragon terrain on them. So
it is a fantastic game.
It is, and
it's later on my list. So, spoiler. I will discuss it later.
Very good. So you're number 6.
My number 6 is Battlestar Galactica, the board game.
Six. Wow.
Yep. It's a fantastic game. We've talked about it a whole ton on this show. If you go back to episode 1 or even the last episode, we talked about the expansion.
I'd give the expansion a buy, by the way.
Okay, yeah. We've got to get your views in on that. But Battlestar Galactica is a great game from Fantasy Flight that came out last year. A great simulation of what goes on in the new reimagining of the TV series. It's cool to me because it's a cooperative game that's not really cooperative, and I really like that aspect to it. But more than anything, I just love the way it simulates the TV show, that all the things that are going on in the show are just done really well, and not in a hokey way, because things that are licensed tend to be so cheesy and mm-hmm. such just a, you know, money grab, not much thought put into it. You can just tell that the person who designed this, Corey Kaniska, that he probably loved the show and just loves good game mechanics too. So
great game. Number six.
Number six, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, my number five game, and you'll probably scoff at this one that it's at the number five slot, is Descent.
Okay. All right. Now I'm really interested as to what one through four are going to be. Okay. Go ahead.
I like Descent quite a bit. I find it doesn't get to the table enough because, you know, I play a lot of kind of combat-focused RPGs, or I'll play HeroScape. But Descent really is just one of those board games where if you find the right people for it, and especially once everyone knows the rules to it and it gets clicking, that game can just really cook. It's got a lot of meat available to it with all the expansions. But even the base game, you've got enough there where you'll be playing a while. It's a fun hack and slash dungeon crawl game. It can get really tense, you know, if you've got a really good overlord and things really aren't going well for you as the hero. It's just a great experience every time I play Descent. So it's a solid number five on my list.
I cannot disagree. It's a fantastic game. So, but yeah, number five.
Number really? Five.
Okay, all right. Okay. Well, number five for me is one that I'm sure isn't anywhere near on Cody's list, and that is Power Grid.
Boo!
I knew that was coming. Power Grid is probably my favorite Euro style board game. I guess it's the highest one on the list that would be considered a Euro game. But I think that the game experiences that I've had with Power Grid with five or six players have been some of the richest and coolest and tightest game experiences I've had. I love that it's a combination of an auction mechanic and resource management and you know, buying and selling. And there's also kind of an area control aspect to it too. It's all these things combined into a really fantastic game. Definitely Freedom on Freeze's best game that he's ever come out with. And the theme to it is pretty cool. But I just find that it's, and I'm almost surprised that you don't like it at all, because it's for me it's a kind of a head game. I love the auction mechanic where you can basically drive the price up on somebody just by getting in their head a little bit. So so that I'm a little surprised, because I know that's kind of something you like to do in games.
Power Grid bores the crap out of me.
Okay,
it's got cool artwork there. Yeah. I'll give it that.
Okay. And then the resource track, I think, is just so intelligently done, where as you take away those blocks or, you know, cubes for the different resources, that's going to drive the price up. I think that was just brilliantly done. So Power Grid, fantastic game, and number five for me.
Uh-huh. My number four game is somewhat the new hotness, Dominion.
Oh, okay.
Excellent game. It's just so different, and I think you can get so many different people to play it. It's just a fun game experience. Like I said, there's no other game like it. It combines some of the deck building strategies from CCGs without the heavy cost. And
that's true.
And the replayability of it is magnificent. So Dominion, a solid number four.
Yeah, even the expansions that are coming out, they're, you know, if you're paying 30 or 40 bucks for them, there's not that many of them, and you could have,
you're getting your money's worth.
You could have every card that's in the game for a fraction of what you'd have to pay for getting every card in Magic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, good pick there. My number four game might be a surprise to you, Cody, and that is Descent.
Okay. I thought it would be higher on your list.
A year ago, Descent was my number one game.
Wow.
And I think that...
Kevin Wilson is crying somewhere.
It's okay, Kevin. It's all right, buddy.
What happened, guys?
But Descent is everything that Cody said earlier, a fantastic game, and I agree with everything that he said. The only thing that has made it drop for me is just that I haven't been able to play it very frequently. And I'm at kind of a place in my life where the games that are going to probably rise to the top for me are ones that can be brought out quickly, played quickly, that you can play with a wide variety of people. I can't really bring in, you know, just a random assortment of people and play Descent. You know, you have to get folks that already know the rules or that are interested in that sort of game. And, you know, maybe that's just more a problem with the people, you know, with the people in my life and the where I am, where I'm at.
Get new friends.
I know. Get out, Cody. But I think that it's... that's probably why it's dropped, more than just the mechanics not being any good or anything like that. It's still a fantastic game. And really, for any gamer, I would highly recommend that if you've never played Descent, you need to play Descent at least once and check it out. But now it's at number four.
Wow. All right, we're getting into the top three, the medalists here.
There you go. The bronze medal.
The bronze medal. Number three for me is Kingsburg.
Oh, wow.
I can't believe you dumped it to 10.
I never win. I'm not going to put it up too high. I know. That's probably why it's so high for you.
Despite the fact I'm undefeated at Kingsburg, it is the perfect hybrid Ameritrash Euro game, in my opinion. It takes the best elements of both, and it makes it into a fun game. It's a game that doesn't drag on. You can play it in an hour, hour and a half maybe, and I think it is just a great game design, and it's got enough luck in it to where you can't just, you know, think up one strategy and win, but it's got things that reward good thinking and good planning. So Kingsburg, a very solid game and one of my very favorites. Number 3 for me.
Okay, all right. I can't disagree with anything you said there.
Thank you.
I wish I could win sometime.
Number 10?
If I could just get one win, it would bump it up at least one
get
spot.
Get alive.
All right, number 3 for me, Cody has already mentioned, it is HeroScape.
Wow, number 3.
And I think that it's been such a surprising game for me from the beginning because I bought this game at Walmart. For the first time I saw it, I was like, it's got all these cool miniatures in it. I heard a little bit about it on BoardGameGeek and bought it. And then I bought like a second master set. And I've been the typical HeroScape collector. I have a huge tub with all the stuff in it and a big bucket full of miniatures. And it's been so accessible. I can play this with my 6-year-old son. I play it with my wife. My wife loves the game. And I can play it with any random assortment of people and get a lot of enjoyment out of it because the rules are so easy to learn. And I think what Cody said there about it being neat that you can have, you know, robots fighting ninjas, fighting a bunch of other kind of things. I think that's appealing to a lot of people because even if you aren't a robot person or a dragon person, you know, there's going to be some figure there that you're going to say, wow, I can't believe they got Wild West guys here, you know, and it can really draw a lot of people in. So, you know, I'm starting to delve into a little bit more of the deeper miniatures games, you know, I talked about doing some painting and doing War Machines. So I definitely like complex rule sets, but I love being able to come back to HeroScape, set it up. The only downside is the setup time, I guess, is getting these hexes to put together. But you can pull it out and play a quick game and just have a great dice rolling time with it. So number 3, HeroScape.
Can't argue that. All right, the silver medalists now
silver.
For each of us. Number 2 for me, Fury of Dracula.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
One of my very favorite games. It doesn't get enough good rep, I think. I especially love playing Dracula, but I will play as the Hunters occasionally. I love the idea behind it, and I've had so many good gaming memories from this where it gets down to that last turn. You've got to kill Dracula now, or he's going to spawn another vampire or something else. And just that kind of trying to find his trail and the teamwork with the Hunters versus one person being Dracula. There's just so many cool little elements to this game that bring it all together. I love the theme. I love the book. It made me read the book, Dracula.
You read the book was because of the game?
Yeah.
I knew you'd read it.
It was because of the game. I had never read it, but I was so I can understand the cards. I read the book.
Yeah.
It was a good book. But Fury of Dracula, to me, there's no other game like it, and I have such a good experience every time I play it. So Fury of Dracula, a very solid number 2.
Wow, you know, I didn't even make my sideboard, but I think probably just because I forgot about it. It is a really, really good game. So, I can't disagree with it. I'm not going to put it that high, I guess. it's cool. I like the. For me, the only reason why I wouldn't put it high is because it just feels kind of samey to me after a while. It's. But I think that's because I'm always playing as the Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's almost a matter, you started 4 corners, then you started to move a little bit closer, and it just seems a little bit formulaic.
Oh, man.
But
see, every game seems so different to me.
Yeah. But we have, you know, we've been talking about game experiences here. I think one of the coolest endings to a game ever was a game that we played of Fury of Dracula. So, you know, I can totally relate to that. So, okay, that's a good pick. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. If you're stupid, that's
no, I'm not going to put it that high, but I know you really like the game. So right. I can't fault you there. All right. Well, my number 2 is one that's not going to be anywhere. I keep anticipating not going to be anywhere near Cody's top, and that's 1960, The Making of the President.
The Fury of Dracula didn't even skirt your top 10 or top 11, as it were.
Nope. And this is really it's real close to being my number 1 game. I just don't get to play it that often because Cody hates it, and my wife likes it, but we don't. It's a longer game, so we don't get as many times to get it to the table, but. I am, if any of you who know me personally, I am a huge presidential trivia buff. I can name all the 40-some-odd presidents.
Yeah, you're a big trivia.
What is it, 44, 45?
43, sir.
Really?
Yes, because Barack Obama is the 44th, But Grover Cleveland was elected twice.
Yeah, I know. But if I name them
I just sat in the Hall of Presidents at Disney World.
Okay, but if I name them in order, Grover Cleveland would be both 22 and 24.
Wow.
And so then
that's impressive.
Okay.
That's impressive.
Like I said, I'm a dork.
And you should go see the Hall of Presidents, by the way.
Really?
Oh, it's neat.
Did they have the Barack Obama statue? Yeah. Did they really? Yeah. The animatronic?
It's good.
Oh, okay.
It gets a little dusty in the end if you're a true patriot,
It's like, I love America. Okay. But this is a great simulation of the 1960 presidential election between John Kennedy and Richard Nixon. And it is, I just can't say enough good things about it. The artwork on it is great. The car-driven gameplay is fantastic. Now, a lot of folks would prefer the game Twilight Struggle, which is not really on either of our lists. I don't think either of us have played a full game of Twilight Struggle.
I haven't played a game of Twilight Struggle.
Okay. And that's a game more about the Cold War. Really similar mechanics, but I just love the theme of this game, and I love how every card has a little bit of history on it. And
I will say I do like that about it. Yeah. That's neat.
And so, you know, you can look at the picture and look at the text of the card, and then you can see what that card does in relation to history, and that it really kind of makes sense as to what the card is doing. So I love that, and it's just a rich game experience, and I love being able to pull out. Cody has like an... Do you have an app on your iPhone for it now?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, it's part of the Score app.
Oh, okay. Where you can just add up all of your electoral college points there and your votes. And it's always a bit of a nail biter down to the end.
Unless you're playing me.
So and I think it probably says the Kingsburg effect here. And that would you say that perhaps one of the reasons why you don't like the game is that I don't think you've ever beat me?
Maybe. To me, there's just so much going on. I get very... I don't know, man. I get very overwhelmed playing it sometimes. I'm just like, oh, you know, where should I focus? And I'm just not good at that sort of game.
But anyway, so that one is number two on my list, the 1960, The Making of the President.
Oh, so we're at number one here.
The gold medalist.
I don't know what yours is. I'm kind of in the dark here.
I think I know what yours is, but go for it.
My number one game is Battlestar Galactica.
That was correct.
The board game. And the reason this is number one, I will add this caveat, is with the expansion. Okay. I think with the expansion, the game experience to me is... it's going to be a meaty one. It's going to take you a few hours, but I just love the way they themed it with the show. Everything that John said, it has become... That is a game I'm willing to sit 3 or 4 hours for anytime someone wants to bring it out.
Wow.
I love the social aspect of it. I love kind of the head games part of it. Mm-hmm. John makes me out to seem like I'm some sort of serial killer. I like getting in people's minds.
It's like, No. It's one of your strong points in games. It's why I think I'm looking forward to our game of diplomacy that we're going to pull out at some point.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're going to be great at that game.
I'm going to get a big feathery hat for that. But BSG, I love the show. And even if I didn't, just the way everything works with that, it's very intelligently designed and... One of my very favorite games. So BSG with the expansion, number one.
Wow, the top of the hill there. All right, well, my number one game is. I'll just say it's Dominion.
Number one.
Number one.
Okay.
And
wow,
I know, and I thought it was just the cult of the new, and I thought it was just the newness and the hype. But you know, I played this for a while now, and I'm just finding that a good criteria in my head for a number one game is kind of the criteria that Board Game Geek uses when they rate something a 10, which is basically, I love this game. I always want to play it. I don't expect that that's ever going to change. That's wow. their definition of a 10. And for me, that's the way it is that anytime I get together for a game night, if Cody were to say, hey, you want to play Dominion? My answer would always be yes. And I even at Gen Con this year, I went into the Rio Grande room. Found some folks there, and they're saying, hey, we're going to pick up a game of Dominion. You want to play? And I immediately sat down because I knew it was going to be a lot of fun. I whipped their butts too. So,
there you go.
I think it's just such an innovative game that's just come out. It's short. It doesn't take hours and hours to play. There's a lot of variety, almost infinite replayability with the different decks of cards that you get. Amazing expandability with it was already a full expansion out. There's another one coming out later this year. So Dominion is my number one. I mean, it could change, you know, within less than a year. But for right now, that's the one that's on top for me.
All right. Well, there you have it. You have both John and I's top 11 games, because these do go to 11. We will post these along with the show notes.
Sure.
Actually, John will post them.
Yeah, just let me have your iPhone and I'll...
And no.
All right, well, that's the big deal for this episode. A little bit long, but hey, we had to go to 11 this
time.
That's
right.
Yep. And now we're going to move into our buy, try, or deny segment, where we're going to be looking at the new hotness in miniatures games.
Arcane Legions. Buy, try, or deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple. All right, it is time for buy, try, or deny, and we have another new hotness. We have Arcane Legions, the hip new miniatures game from Wells Expeditions. And here to break down the rules for you, as always, is John.
Like one of the plagues of Moses, an unearthly mist crept across the land, unleashing arcane powers upon an unsuspecting world. It started in the Middle East, and as the earth turned and darkness fell across the globe, the ghostly mist followed. Within the span of 24 hours, the world was cast into chaos. Oh. No, chaos.
Chaos.
Let's say, cast into
chaos.
Thank you.
Ooh.
sorry. The arcane power of the mist left much of humanity unaltered.
We're unaltered.
But those it touched, it transformed completely.
I'm transformed completely.
Magic infused their very bones. Manifested in their children, came unbidden to the fingertips of their... So that's all the flavor text for Arcane Legions. So Arcane Legions is a new miniatures game from...
Romans fighting Egyptians!
Fighting Chinese. Wells Expedition is a company that was comprised of some folks that used to be around with WizKids, who did all the Clicks games. And so these folks are, I guess, very well-versed in miniatures gaming and in the collectible aspect of things. And so they decided to come up with this game that is collectible, but it's the marketing plan for it is a little bit different. We'll talk about that in a second, but let's just kind of get into the game itself. This game is for two or more players, although we're probably going to make this a two-player game, at least Cody and I did for our game. And there are three factions involved in the game. And we have the Roman Empire, the Egyptian Imperium, and then the Han Dynasty. And then there's also going to be some mercenary forces and things that are going to mix in. But those are your three main factions. And in your starter box for Arcane Legions, you're going to get enough miniatures to play an army for... each of these factions. So there's 40 some odd miniatures for Egyptians, Romans, and Han. And so one interesting aspect of this game that you should know up front is that these miniatures are not like HeroScape miniatures. They actually will come on plastic sprues that you have to cut them off the sprues and kind of file them down and assemble them. So some of these miniatures, a lot of them are going to come without arms. You have to actually put the arm on, and some of them have shields you have to put on. And
it's a bit of an undertaking at first. There's a lot of dudes.
Yep, and I when I got my starter box, I put together the Egyptians and the Romans because that's who we played with. But it probably took two or three evenings, and I'm slow at this because I'm not real familiar with miniatures assembly and stuff, so I was new at it. But it took probably two or three evenings for me to get everything put together and glued. Now, they say that it's not required to glue these things together, but you're really going to want to glue them together or they're going to continue to fall apart. So just get a little bit of super glue and you can put all these things together. So you're going to get all these different kinds of little miniatures. And then the big draw for this game is that these miniatures are going to be sitting on these plastic bases. And they're sort of like these little honeycomb grids that have little holes in them. And then the miniatures have little pegs on their feet that are going to stick into the holes. But in between the miniatures and the honeycomb base is a unit card. So that card is going to be placed over top of the base, and it's going to cover up some of the holes that are in the base there. So, you know, maybe that the base will have 24 holes in it, but then you cover it up with this unit card, and now it only has 12 holes in there. So 12 spots for figures to go. And then you're going to have a certain number of figures that will go onto that unit to form that whole unit. And it's going to be less than the number of holes that are there. So even if you have a full unit, let's say you have 12 holes, maybe only 9 or 10 of those are going to be full of figures. And that's actually becomes a very important part in the game when we talk about regrouping. So you're going to get a whole bunch of miniatures and a whole bunch of these unit cards. So there are two kinds of units in the game. There's going to be a formation base and a sortie base. And the sortie base is like a little square. The formation base is double that. So you're going to have a whole army of these things. Each unit card is going to be a certain number of points. And the game says that for a full game, you're going to play, the game says, the rules say that for a full game, you're going to want to play with 7,000 points. And there's not quite 7,000 points of each faction in the starter set.
They're smart.
Of course.
Marketing.
So you can also add on to your starter set things like cavalry. I actually bought cavalry packs for the Romans and the Egyptians. And these are kind of cool too, because it's not like when you think of Romans, you're thinking of, you know, horses and that kind of stuff. And they do have guys on horses, but this is sort of it's like the Weird West, like Deadlands, but it's the weird Egypt and the weird Romans. And so these guys are riding on giant bears.
Yeah.
You know? And you've got like undead Egyptians that are like zombies and stuff, and skeletons and mummies that are running around.
That's
so
cool.
So a lot of interesting flavor in the game. And I was kind of making fun of, I guess, the flavor at the beginning here, but there is some interesting text and story that goes along with the game. But this is a mass action miniatures game. So don't think of this in terms of like Hero Escape, where it's individual guys moving around in a battlefield. Think of this in a grand scale of, you know, literally hundreds of troops on either side that are lined up against one another. And it's using these bases that they're going to be able to move around on the board. And so the basics of gameplay is that on your turn, you're going to have a certain number of action points that will allow you to move and to attack. And also you can use action points to do something called regrouping. We'll talk about that in just a second. But moving is going to be very easy in that you're going to get a certain number of movement points, and each point is going to allow you to move up to a certain number of sortie bases, and you're going to use that sortie base, the little square, as your movement measuring tool. So you don't need to have like a measuring, a measuring stick. You don't have a tape measure like in some games. You can just use the edge of these bases. For those of you who may have played the Pirates of the Spanish Main collectible game, that they sort of use that same idea with that. We use the side of the card. And so you're going to move, and then you're going to shoot and do things like that. And there are rules for if you come up upon someone else's base, you're going to kind of snap those two together so that they're right in front of one another. And then you're going to roll dice in order to resolve combat. Now, there's three different kinds of dice included in the game. There are red dice, which represent close combat or melee. There's blue dice that represent ranged combat. And then there's white dice that represent defense. And the number of dice that you're going to roll in a particular combat is going to be based upon how your troops are arranged on your unit base. So I mentioned before that you're going to have a certain number of holes that are available for your troops to sit in. And there's a certain starting location where your miniatures are going to go. And next to those different holes, there may be a symbol of a blue die or a red die or a white die. Or there also may be a symbol that's like a yellow chevron, which stands for movement. There may be even a symbol that's some sort of a special symbol that goes along with your particular unit to give it a special ability or something. And so the number of dice you're able to roll is going to be based upon who is standing on a die of that color. So if you are in combat and you want to do close combat, you're going to be wanting to roll red dice. So you're going to look down at your unit base there, and you're going to see which of your miniatures are standing next to red dice. And you'll count up that number of red dice that you see where their miniature's standing. And that's the number you're going to roll. On the other side of the table there, whoever is in the defensive position is going to count up the number of white dice that have miniatures next to them on their base. And then you're going to resolve your combat that way. The actual combat resolution with the dice is pretty easy. Both players will roll their dice. Then you're going to arrange your dice in order from highest to lowest value.
Risk style.
Kind of risk style, yeah. And then you're going to take the top die of the offense and the top die of the defense and compare them. And whoever the winner is going to deal one damage to the opponent there. So even though you're rolling defensive dice, you're still you still can deal damage to the attacker. So it's not just like a one-sided thing. So you'll just kind of go down the dice comparing one-to-one until you resolve all of your combat. Now, let's say that the offense was rolling 6 dice and the defense is rolling only 3. Well, now you have 3 dice that are basically going through undefended. Well, the way that works is that there's always sort of a ghost die that the offense is up against, and that is a value of a 2. So it basically means that you're going to have to roll better than a 2 in order to inflict any damage. Because on ties, no damage is dealt at all. So, you know, that's... But if you happen to have rolled a 1 on your offense die, it's not like that 2 is going to deal a damage. So the ghost dice don't deal damage. But I think that's a nice little mechanic so that if you happen to have a large disparity in number of dice that you're not just completely...
You can get overwhelmed really early. You've got kind of a built-in defense there.
Yep. But since I mentioned that, you know, where you're standing is important, then that's what brings in this regroup action. And so on your turn, one of the things that you can do is to spend an action point in order to regroup one of your units. And that will allow you to pick up your miniatures and move them around to different holes. And so let's say that you've just moved and now you're in a position where on your next turn, you might actually need to be in a defensive posture. Well, then you're going to want to move your miniatures around so that they're over where the white dice are to maximize that. Or maybe you want to change your formation so that you can move faster. So you're going to want to move your miniatures to where there's a bunch of those yellow movement chevrons. And so this is probably the best strategic element of the game, and the thing that's the most innovative that I've seen is the fact that you are constantly trying to figure out what is the best formation for you to be in based upon what situation that you're in. And so for ranged combat, you have archers and things like that that are going to be rolling blue dice. And so you want to make sure that you're rolling the right number of blue dice for that. There's also lots of special abilities. This sort of plays a little bit like any other collectible miniatures game or a collectible card game where different units will have different things that they can do, bonuses or you know, special movements that they can make or things like that. So there's a lot of variety in the game, but that's really the basic mechanic is that you're trying to move your guys around to get them in the right positions so that you can deal the most damage, do the most movement, have the best defense, things like that. And so you're just going to kind of continue on. Oh, now the way damage is dealt is that for every point of damage that you deal, it's going to basically destroy a figure based upon how many pegs are in their feet. So, for example, a normal trooper with a sword is just going to have one peg. And so if you deal one damage, it's going to kill that guy entirely. But some of the guys who are like the bigger guys and the people that are on horseback, they might have two pegs. So if you deal only one damage, then it's actually just going to deal one damage to that horse or whatever. And then that damage will stick. So you'll put some kind of a marker on there to show that it has one wound. Some of the even bigger creatures, like the bears I was mentioning from the cavalry, they have four pegs, and so it takes a lot more to kill them. But that's the way the damage is dealt, and then the person who's defending, they get to choose, or the person who has had the damage inflicted upon them gets to choose who they're going to take out of their base there. So a lot of customizability in the game. Like any other miniatures game, you can build your army however you like. Like any other collectible game, you can definitely buy as much as you want to be able to customize your army. Now, the way that their marketing plan has worked is that you can buy that starter pack, which, like I said, is not going to give you quite enough points for a full army of each type, but it'll get you started playing, and you can definitely play a game with the starter box. If you want to add on the cavalry, that's going to be an extra cost. There's also some infantry packs you can buy, and then there's also some packs that are going to have some special hero characters in them. And those hero characters are going to be painted, fully painted. I should mention that all the other figures in this game are gray, just unpainted gray miniatures, except for possibly their shields. Some of them have shields that they're holding that are full color. So that gives you a little bit of splash of color in the game. If you're a big-time painter, then you may want to paint those, but I'm not, so probably not going to spend the time to paint all those little miniatures, but that would be kind of neat. I know all the demos we saw at Gen Con, they had, of course, fully painted racks of miniatures.
That'd take a long time.
Definitely. But that is the basics of the game. I didn't go into like the real specific mechanics. There's actually a cool tool that comes with the game that's used for turning that allow you to turn 90 degrees and 45 degrees. That's kind of a neat little mechanic, but I didn't want to bog you guys down with too many rules, I guess, but hopefully that'll give you a flavor for how Arcane Legions works. And we played a two-player game of this, go ahead and just throw it to you, Cody, now that are you awake?
Hi okay, there.
Sorry about that.
Good to be here.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you thought about Arcane Legions?
I really like the marketing plan with it, because it seems like, at least with talking with some of the folks at Wells Expeditions, that they got the idea that a lot of people like looking at the big games of Warhammer or 40K, you know, where you have just these huge armies running at each other. but they balk at the startup cost. And I think here they've given a much lower priced option for people who still want to have kind of big epic battles. And the idea of the base being being more than just a base, that's a really innovative thing. And it kind of goes back to the clicks idea where the base had multiple uses, but this is done a lot better.
Yeah.
So instead of having, you know, all these individual things, it's very squad based and you're moving units, and it's just a good idea. And like I said, it comes in at a much lower price point, so people can, you know, we each could have bought a pack and then we would have been good to go. I mean, obviously we could buy more if we wanted, but we would have been fine with just what we had.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and mention that this starter box, which comes with a total of 120 miniatures. 120 miniatures.
That's solid.
And that's 40 for each faction. You're going to get all the plenty of the formation and sortie bases that you need. You're going to get all the dice. Now, they are very, very tiny dice. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to really get into this game, I'd recommend going and getting maybe some
regular
Chessex dice or something. Yeah. You can order the right colors and everything. But you're going to get the turning tool. You'll get all the cards and everything that are associated with the game. All of that for $35 retail.
It's solid.
Which is, I think, really good. And just, if you're someone who enjoys assembling things and doing that hobby aspect of it, I had a lot of fun doing that. And, you know, that fun is included in the game as well. So that, and then the price points for the boosters, I think the cavalry packs are like $16. And then the infantry packs, I think, are between, you know, $12-$15, something like that. So, you know, it's collectible, and that might cause some folks to balk. But, well, I interrupted you. Well, go ahead and finish to what you were saying about that.
No, I was pretty much done. I would say it is not as collectible as some. There's a collectible aspect to it, but I don't think you necessarily have to get in that much of the collectible aspect to be competitive. I think with this game really rewards a very smart strategy in a large-scale combat sort of thing. If you're good at that sort of thing, then the proof will be in the pudding with you. You'll be able to really, you know, do some damage there. So I would say it's not quite like magic level collectible.
Right, I would agree with that. Yeah. And I think they've done that on purpose. They just, they don't want to break the bank on people. But
right, because I think, like I said, a low price point is one of the things they're pushing. You know,
yeah,
people get turned off very quickly, you know, self included, with that Games Workshop kind of, you know, the Warhammer 40K stuff. You know, you just see the initial buy-in and you're like, well, there's no way, you know.
Yep. I think for board gamers, I think this is a good game to get them into a miniature style game. Sure. Like, maybe you are someone who might want to eventually get into something like Warhammer. Well, this would be a good...
We're not being bought by the D6 generation, are we?
I know.
We've had a lot of miniatures talk this episode.
That's true. That's probably my fault.
I mean, if we had a handsome offer, maybe we would.
But. That's true. You hear that, guys? Yeah. Russ? Craig? Rafe? Really?
We might double our salaries.
I know.
Add some zeros
double
on the
Double zero,
end.
Yeah. But I think it is a good sort of a gateway for board gamers to possibly get into miniatures games. Now, I'm saying that as a board gamer, not as a miniature, because I don't really... You know, yeah. I'm just getting into it, too, but it seems like it's a good... gateway entry point. I also mentioned that the size table that you're supposed to play this on is a 6-foot by 4-foot table.
Yeah.
but when Cody and I played, we played on his 6-foot...
5-foot round.
Oh, is it really that 5? Yeah. I thought it was bigger. That 5-foot round table, and it worked fine.
It was fine.
It was fine. And I've actually played a game of this with my son on the floor, and it works pretty good on the floor, too, if you want to play on the carpet or something like that.
Yeah, you could even get a little... tarp or some sort of like a sheet, and you could even just, you know, spray paint it different, you know, browns, and if you want to get creative with it, make it look like the ground and just put it on the floor if you wanted to, you know.
Yep, and you can add as much terrain as you want, just like any other miniature game. There's even some things called control terrain that I didn't really go into too much detail on, but it's these little square areas that you're going to lay down where you're going to possibly get some victory points by getting on top of those. I guess I should have mentioned the point of the game. Usually the game is going to be played to a certain number of victory points, which, you know, if you wipe out the entire competition, that's always going to be a win anyway.
That's how John won.
But you also might be able to get points by controlling these areas of control terrain at the beginning of each turn. So there's some different tactics there. So that's just kind of an overview of Arcane Legions and sort of how the pricing and the marketing works for that. So I'll just throw it to you, Cody. Arcane Legions, buy, try, or deny?
It's going to be a try for me.
Okay.
It's going to be a try because personally, as I mentioned earlier, I favor the more kind of small group combat, you know, where you have a few heavy hitters, you got some smaller ones. And do that. I don't really get into the large scale kind of mass armies going at it, But I will say I'll give it a try because I think, as I mentioned earlier, they've made it very accessible, and it's a fun game. I mean, I think it's easy to learn the rules, and you can really get into that large army feel pretty quickly with this game. So if that's something you're looking for, I'd definitely try this one out. Personally, it wasn't my cup of tea, but I could see this being very successful for some folks. So try for me. John, Arcane Legions, buy, try, or deny?
I think it's going to be a try for me too. I think personally, just if it's just me, it's a buy because mm-hmm. I bought it. But also because I think it's a lot of fun. I think the gameplay is really interesting, and it's not just roll dice and kill stuff. Although there's nothing wrong with roll dice and kill
Absolutely
stuff.
Absolutely not.
No, but, sir. But that extra aspect of, well, I want to charge in and beat on this guy, but if I don't leave enough action points to be able to regroup, he's going to kill me the next turn. You know, having that in mind, I think is really important. You know, I'll go ahead and mention, we're going to talk about it next episode, but Space Hulk, I think, has a really similar aspect to it, too, where you have a certain number of points, and if you spend them all just on shooting, then you haven't spent them on Overwatch, and you might be in trouble there. So, but anyway, it's got that same sort of a push-pull to it of you don't want to spend all your points just on combat. You want to leave some back for that regrouping part of it. So, but I'm going to give it a try because I don't think it's going to be for everybody. If you're not a collectible fan, if the word collectible scares you at all, then you're probably not going to like this game. You know, it's definitely going to take a little bit of an investment, but I think if you wanted to have a different kind of game in your repertoire that you maybe never tried before, if you wanted to dip your toe into the water of miniatures gaming and assembly and painting and that kind of stuff, that might be a good entry point for you. But not enough to give it a buy, but I'll definitely give this a strong try.
So two solid tries for Arcane Legions.
So that's just going to about wrap up our show for this episode. And but you know, before we do that, let's hear some more from you. I don't feel like I've heard enough from Myriad Games.
I never hear enough from Myriad Games.
No. I want to hear Dan's lilting voice again.
Dan?
Greetings from Myriad Games, your friendly professional game store. Myriad Games presentations feature a wide variety of family fun for everyone. Check out our summer convention coverage from Origins and Gen Con, including interviews with publishers, designers, and industry insiders. Myriad Games presentations are available through iTunes and the show links at myriadgames.com. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes to receive your complimentary pair of Myriad dice and to be entered in drawings for free Myriad gear and $100 of Myriad money. Your feedback is very important to us. Please email us through myriadgames.com with your comments, questions, suggestions, abuse, and general ridicule. For more about a myriad of games, visit your friendly professional game store. And be sure to visit us online at myriadgames.com. Myriad Games. So many games, so little time. So start playing.
All right, so thank you, Dan. Always appreciate that little word from Myriad Games. Check them out at myriadgames.com. That just about wraps up this show. Join us in 2 weeks. We got a
double-decker here.
Yeah.
We will be reviewing Space Hulk, The New Hotness, and Chaos in the Old World. And instead of just reviewing it, you might win Chaos in the Old World.
That's right. There's no way I'm letting go of my copy of Space Hulk. But hey, Chaos in the Old World, you could win.
That's right. So
stay tuned if you're at all interested in that. That very well could be our next contest.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
I hope so, because I might. Can I enter?
No.
Oh, that sucks.
But you can play with me next week.
Oh, that's fun.
Cool. In the meantime, we'd invite you to check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. I'm going to be trying to get another Game On written review up in the next week or two. So be looking for that. And we also have a guild on BoardGameGeek.com where you can check out our forums there. In the last episode, we had a poll on our, a P-O-L-L, on our a guild regarding gaming motivations. We got some interesting responses there. And so we might put up another poll for this episode, just talking about maybe top 11 games or something like that. We'll
have the people pick apart our lists.
Exactly.
What box of golf?
Which of these 11 games do you think really was a lame idea? But we'll try to interact with you guys there. We love to hear from you as listeners, and the best way that you can get a hold of us is
the Game On Inbox. You can reach us at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
We also invite you, as always, to check out our donation button on our website. We always appreciate anything you can throw at us via PayPal. So we appreciate all the donations we've received thus far. We've gotten some really nice, generous ones recently, and we really do appreciate that.
And be at peace, know that 100% of the donations does go back to you, the listeners, and goes to the show.
Absolutely. We don't keep any back to polish our Bentleys, we promise.
Dang. As we mentioned earlier, Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network.
Proud member.
You can check out our show and other great shows like us at pulpgamer.com.
Absolutely. All right, so join us in 2 weeks. We're going to be, it's going to be hammer time.
It's going to be hammer time.
We're going to be looking at a lot of Warhammer and Warhammer 40K.
We may have to stop, collaborate, and listen.
All of those things.
Wait, that's Vanilla Ice.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not very hip.
I'll give you a pass. It was like a 91, right?
Thank you.
All right, well, until then.
Game on.
These go to 11.